Well, I want to thank you, first of all, for deciding to come on for a talk with me. It was a genuine pleasure to meet you and your wife, Linda, near your home in Florida. We had a lovely meal and a fascinating conversation, and I appreciate your willingness to join me to discuss the topics that were brought up over lunch, and I do appreciate that these subjects and your exposure to them are of lesser importance to you than your faith and your family. You didn't have to accept this interview to set the record straight, but I think it's incredibly important that you've decided to do this. So once again, just want to thank you for providing this opportunity.
Well, I wanted to say that I agree with you. We had quite a lot of pleasure in meeting you and having lunch with you. Matter of fact, I couldn't believe that we actually spent almost 3 hours at lunch that day and thoroughly enjoyed it. The two of you are a great tag team to set us both at ease in discussing these things. But as I stated there, and I want to state right at the outset, I am a firm Bible-believing Christian. I am born again. I believe the Bible in its original transcripts is perfect and infallible. I think we have problems in some of the English translations. There's no doubt about that. But they're not substantive problems. And I believe that if we would take the Bible more seriously as a society or as individuals, we'd have a lot easier play in our societies today, in our families, in our work, in everything. And so everything that I'm going to say will come from that basis. That's who I am. I've got a checkered past just like everybody does. We're all sinful creatures. We all have done things in our past that wish we hadn't done, and have not done things that we wish we had. I am a different person today because of my Lord Jesus Christ. And I just want that at the outset. All right. So anything I say will come from that basis.
Absolutely. And to be honest, that's something that at some point during this conversation I'd like to discuss with you in terms of spiritual beliefs and the impact on the phenomenon. But I think that it would be probably best to start this off with you providing some background information on who you are, just for people who may not be aware of who Oak Shannon is. Could you give us a brief overview of your career history?
Well, it starts out as I'm a hick from the sticks of Eastern Kentucky. Never saw the ocean in my life. But my oldest brother, Cecil, went into the Navy, and that enamored me of the Navy. And I applied for the Naval Academy and was sent there at 17, the young age of 17. Spent 4 years at the Academy and then 22 years as commissioned service in the surface fleet, cruisers and destroyers, as we call them, the Greyhounds of the fleet. And then a year in Vietnam on river patrol boats. PBRs, we call them plastic boat river. And they're actually converted pleasure speed craft. They slapped some 50 caliber machine guns on them and put a bunch of sailors on them that had more guts than brains. And so that's what they were. But I, because of my service in Vietnam, I was given basically a carte blanche opportunity to choose my next duty station. And I chose to go to the postgraduate school. The Navy has a postgraduate school in Monterey, California. It's an absolutely gorgeous place. It's an old converted domicile or visiting place for the rich and famous way back in the 1800s, and it's just a gorgeous place, and it's a fabulous place to study subjects that we like. My topic was nuclear physics, and I got my master's degree in physics there, and went back out into the fleet as a lieutenant commander. And I, you know, as most people, the people who would actually admit this, if they're alert and awake and paying attention to what's actually going on around them, people know about the UFO, what used to be called the UFO environment. And of course, it's of interest to people. One of the problems is that it's fraught with a whole bunch of people that want to get attention for themselves or make up stories and be publicized and things of that sort. And so it tends to be colored by all of that kind of activity.
Right, right.
And so serious scientists tend to shy away from it. But when I was a junior officer, I was on watch on the bridge of a destroyer one night out in the middle of the Pacific. We were all by ourselves, no other ships around. We call it independent steaming, and it's a very lonely existence. But about 2 o'clock in the morning, the starboard lookout came rushing into the pilot house where I was. Lieutenant, there's a UFO following us. And I said, well, come show me, son. And we stepped out on the bridge wing, and he pointed to it, and there was a red, white, green flashing light astern of the ship, directly astern of the ship. Well, we were in following seas, and when a destroyer is in following seas, it tends to holler back and forth. The fantail tends to swing back and forth. And what we were seeing was a star near the horizon that appeared to be rotating red, white, and green, and the fantail was moving back and forth and made that look like it. So that's exactly the kind of thing that can happen to people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It was unidentified aerial phenomenon.
Mm.
So UAP fits that better, because or unidentified celestial phenomenon. Maybe. I'm not sure that kid ever really calmed down. He still thought, I don't know. That's. I tried to show him what star it was.
He's probably out there researching away like myself and others.
Yeah, he probably is to this day.
Yeah.
But that kind of piqued my interest. Then since I was a kid, I had always wanted to be a research scientist. Now, I don't know where that came from, what it was that triggered my prepubescent mind to want to do that, but I grew up that way. And so the Navy was kind of almost a sidelight to that. I went off into the Navy because I wanted to follow my brother's footsteps. And I thoroughly enjoyed the Navy. The Navy was very good to me. I had nothing to say bad about the Navy. I love my school and the service. I had a very good time in that service. But once I went to the postgraduate school, I met a fellow named Ferris Williams, and he was in our study group, if you will. And we were there for 3 years together. Well, Ferris was a farm boy from southern Missouri. And he talked like he was stepping over old cow pies. He had that that kind of country twang, you know, and people who just tried to picture who he was all about by listening to his voice would think this guy's not very bright. Well, what he was brilliant on the order of an Einstein, and his approach to technical issues was, well, why is that so? You know, someone would say, well, this is such and such. And his response was, well, who says? Why is that so? What do you mean by that? What assumptions have you made to come to that conclusion? And that led to an incident when he was a lieutenant in the Navy, where he was teaching safety for nuclear weapons. Now, there are people who will listen to this and think that I'm giving classified information, but this is all public information, and I learned it through public information and from Willie himself. By the way, Ferris Williams to me is Willie, and he always will be Willie. He's now passed on, but he was the kind of person that couldn't teach these kids coming through the nuclear weapons school without knowing the basis of what he was teaching. And so he took E equals MC squared, Einstein's famous equation, basically went back to the basics and developed what had to be the yield, the nuclear yield of certain Navy weapons. What he discovered was that the yield of those weapons was about 150% of what the Navy was saying that it was. Now, that doesn't sound like a problem, but it's a problem if you're storing those devices, especially if you're storing those devices on a heavy steel ship below the waterline, because what you have on either side of the storage of these weapons is you have a neutron mirror. Neutrons, if a fire breaks out and you cook off a low order nuke, or it just gives you a little bit of fissile material or fissile action, then the neutrons will bounce back and forth across that space in between the two bulkheads of the ship and the water. And that will cause a terrible problem. And he pointed this out to a collection of high Navy brass and elevated nuclear scientists in Albuquerque, New Mexico, long, long ago. And basically it was Ferris Williams, Willie Williams, and his little Sears calculator against the collected wisdom, supposedly, of Los Alamos and Sandia laboratories and the top Navy brass. And he proved to the brass, at least, that those scientists had not sharpened their pencil properly, that they were wrong and he was right. He was the only one in that room of all those people who was holding forth with those ideas. Well, that got him to thinking that, well, my goodness, if the Navy and these two national laboratories were that wrong on something that fundamental, then what's to say they're not wrong about a whole lot of other things? And so what he did was he started digging into, well, what is the basis of physics? You know, that's kind of fundamental to our lives. And so, of course, the postgraduate school was a perfect place for him to be. And I watched him for 3 years as he worked through very methodically, well, why do we say that about such and so? Why is that equation so? Why did you make that assumption about that situation? And he developed what became known as the dynamic theory. It's a five-dimensional physics theory that says that that if you postulate three fundamental laws, conservation of energy, which everyone will salute to, the second law of thermodynamics, which Einstein and others, no one has an argument with that. If it's stated as a general term in systems, and then a way of comparing one system's entropy to another, then what you have is three basic laws that develop then and that require five dimensions in order to express it. One dimension, of course, is time, but the fifth dimension is mass density. And it basically develops out of that, the mathematics develops all the basic elements of current physics, including Einstein's physics of general and special relativity. And because it's a new concept, it's essentially been ignored. So that got us to think. I was helping both Willie and I ended up in Los Alamos National Laboratory trying to forward his theory. And of course, there were people working with us who were in this arena of UFO interest. And whether we wanted to see it, look into it or not, we were learning about it. I said the other day, we're kind of looking over their shoulder.
Right, right.
I wasn't doing that kind of research. I wasn't digging into it, really. I had a file of such reports and things. But because we were working on a five-dimensional physics theory, and then I had other special projects going on, I couldn't afford, like I said before, I could not afford to be weird in this arena also.
Right.
So I couldn't be.
Right.
Now, Linda and I, my wife and I, have looked at some of your videos, and we've read the what they call the disclosure document by Admiral Wilson,
right,
or about Admiral Wilson.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't tell you whether that's true or not. I have no idea. But Linda and I know almost everybody in that whole arena.
Right.
And I have worked closely with some of them. So there.
Well, before we jump into that, let me just quickly touch on the Los Alamos lab. So, as you said, you were very busy at that point. Were you actually director of special projects at this point?
I was the deputy group leader for special projects,
right,
and then I became the program manager for special projects.
And so there were people, as you said, you were kind of looking over the shoulder at people that seemed to be involved in that kind of study. Was that, to your knowledge, was that an official working group that was in Los Alamos that was tasked with that type of thing?
No, it was not.
Just
it
a wasn't. Kind of general interest.
That was their general interest. I had one scientist and one technician who were up to it in, over their eyeballs. They loved that and dug into it very thoroughly. But it was a personal interest, as
right,
far as I could tell. And they had work to do in my group. You know, as they say, they had a daytime job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this was their nighttime pastime, if you will.
Right, right. And you said to us that the general conclusion that was drawn up was that these UFOs, or at least the ones that were being observed by these people and looking at the behaviors, the conclusion was that these were likely interdimensional in nature. Can you expand at all on what that really meant?
Well, with Willie and I seriously looking at this five-dimensional physics theory, it was like rolling off a log. I mean, my goodness. What we're seeing in the reports that people are making about the way these things move, the way they change direction so quickly, the way they tend to just all of a sudden flash out of view, we were convinced in the probably mid to late 80s at the latest that these are interdimensional. These are not physical in the sense of being a three-dimensional craft operated by three-dimensional creatures. So we became convinced of that in the mid to late 80s. I'm not sure when, but it was like it was like rolling off luck. It was like, well, of course, these are not physical actions by these things. They are popping into and out of our dimension. Matter of fact, I dug out my copy of Flatland.
Yes, yes, I remember you bringing this up.
That's why, I mean, if somebody's interested in trying to get a picture of what it's like, if there is a physically real fifth dimension and others, and there are entities who can pop in and out of that dimension into our dimensions, then Flatland, although it's a little tough to read, it's just a pamphlet, really, will give you a feel of what it's like. People who live on a flat surface and all of a sudden a sphere passes through their flat surface and they see a dot at first, and they see the dot grow into a circle, and then the circle diminishes down to a dot again. If they see a triangle or a pyramid come through, they see other odd shapes coming through. Well, to us, that must be what's going on here. We're seeing different views of these things. They look different to different people, the ones that are
right.
Substantial reports. Now, there were reports that were just, okay, that's trash. But the reports that made sense from reasonable observers, we thought, okay, that's interdimensional. And it's just different presentation.
So essentially what we might be seeing when it comes to these UFOs is a lower dimensional slice of a higher dimensional object, and it's just how we're able to perceive it in our restricted linear space-time. That's very interesting. And I think it, you know, because I really do wonder where this conversation is going to go. In the last 5 years or so, we've witnessed a series of admissions from various departments of the US government, most notably actually the US Navy, in relation to UFO sightings and incursions over sensitive military sites and training ranges. US Navy pilots have come out on the record to acknowledge their experiences. Video footage has come out as well of these encounters, and it's been officially acknowledged by the Department of Defense. And we're now in a moment where a push for transparency on what the US government really knows about UFOs has become a bipartisan talking point within Congress. The desire to learn more about this phenomenon has galvanized public, scientific, political interest, and it's continuing to grow. And you touched on it briefly, but there is a particular facet of this interest in the UFO subject that started to rise in its prominence to the point at which it's actually been discussed in an official congressional hearing in DC. So I would like to ask you just a few questions about a series of documents, and I'm going to explain for those of you listening who don't actually know about them. A series of documents that found their way into the public domain after they were discovered in the files of the now deceased Apollo 14 astronaut, Dr. Edgar Mitchell. And the documents, or more accurately, the transcript, because these are not actually government documents of any form. It's a private set of papers. And these papers are a transcript of a conversation that allegedly took place between a government astrophysicist, a man named Dr. Eric Davis, and a former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, a man named Admiral Thomas R. Wilson. And the transcript of notes that were allegedly taken during this meeting describe a conversation between Admiral Wilson and Eric Davis that involves the Admiral's alleged attempts to gain access to actionable intelligence within the Pentagon in relation to programs that may be hiding information on UFOs. And during this alleged conversation that it's described within these now public notes, Admiral Wilson tells Eric Davis about a series of programs that he discovered hidden deep within the Black Project's records of the Pentagon that were actively involved in attempts to reverse engineer a recovered craft or a vehicle of some description that they believed could operate in air, sea, space, and perhaps even other dimensions, with the conclusion of the program directors being that this was not man-made, not made by human hands. Now, this transcript has been floating around online for a number of years, with a pretty wide divide being created within the research community in regards to their overall legitimacy. And although behind closed doors, one of the individuals involved has confirmed their legitimacy, and those closest to the story have vouched for their accuracy, there has been a recent shift towards public acknowledgement. This was made clear when a man named Dr. Gary Nolan, one of the world's leading geneticists who works closely with Eric Davis, openly acknowledged his belief that the transcript of this meeting is indeed legitimate. And he said this to millions of people during an interview on Fox News. And he even acknowledged how he had briefed a sitting congressman, a man named Mike Gallagher, on this transcript. And Mike Gallagher then brought these documents to an official congressional hearing on UFOs. These documents are actually now available to download off of the US Congress's own website. Now, I would not expect you to be able to confirm the legitimacy of the transcript itself or whether the meeting actually took place, because the alleged meeting has nothing to do with you in a direct sense. However, your name is mentioned in these documents, and so for the sake of clarification, I think it's important that we just get your side of this on the record. So I would just like to be able to ask you, first of all, whether or not you personally know Dr. Eric W. Davis.
Yeah.
And do you personally?
I didn't work with him day in and day out, but I did work with him. I know him fairly well.
May I ask how you first got to know him?
In mutual projects, mutual acquaintances, meetings, things of that sort.
And do you personally know Admiral Thomas R. Wilson?
Yes, I do. But again, I know him. And of course, I know of him. But I read somewhere that his response was, "Oak who?" And I thought that was kind of funny. As I mentioned to you, I consider myself eminently forgettable. I'm sure that my memory of him is stronger than his memory of me, because he became a flag officer. I went off and did weird things on top of a mesa in New Mexico. So, so I would expect that he would not remember me as well as I remember him.
Did Did Admiral Wilson get in contact with you in 2001 or 2002, inquiring into the background and overall trustworthiness of Dr. Eric Davis?
Earlier than that,
Was it earlier than that? My apologies.
yeah, no, it's well, we moved to Florida in 2000, and Linda is listening in the background, so she can yell at me and tell me if I'm wrong.
Hey, Linda.
2001, 2001. I had had a heart attack and had actually died on the ICU table, and had my own out-of-body experience, by the way.
Yes, I want to talk to you about that a little bit later on. Absolutely.
I was eventually forced to retire medically because I could not get back in the saddle, even remote work. And I was at home. I was ha several complications out of that experience, out of that problem, kept recurring over the months. This was in like May of 99, honey. Yeah, May of 99. And throughout the summer, I was having these other problems being cropped up for that. And so I was at home. Actually, I was actually writing, trying to write a novel about the destruction of the Twin Towers. This was in 1999. I had to trash that when it actually happened.
Wow.
I got this phone call, and it was from Admiral Wilson. And he asked me, now this was not a short conversation. I was recuperating. I was able to carry on this conversation on the phone, but I wasn't able to do much else at that point. And we had a discussion, and one of the things he wanted to know was, could he trust Eric Davis? And I think he may have even mentioned Hal Putoff and one or two other people. And I mentioned that yes, I believe that Eric Davis was an honorable and conscientious scientist, and that he would honor any restrictions the Admiral might put on him. And I thought it would be safe for him to contact him.
Did he say at all why he was seeking that background information during your conversation?
No, he really didn't.
No, but you did.
Not to my memory. Not to my memory. I do not recall that and I think I would have recalled that. If he'd said, "I want to check on the little green men," I would have said, "Whoa, okay."
Yeah, certainly would have recalled that.
Eric Davis does other things than that, or at
Oh
least
yeah,
he did.
oh yeah. He's a brilliant scientist and a
He
brilliant
is.
mind. But just yeah, so he did call you up. He did ask about Eric Davis, and you did subsequently vouch for Dr. Eric Davis in
I've
response
asked
to
for him.
his yeah.
That's a good way to put it. I've asked for him.
All right, and just one last question on these notes. And to be fair, you have actually already glossed over this, but I just wanted to kind of get it in a confirmatory statement. So in these notes that were recovered from Dr. Edgar Mitchell's estate, that are a transcription of an alleged meeting that took place between Admiral Wilson and Dr. Eric Davis, it's mentioned within the transcript of their conversation that you were difficult to get in touch with at the time because you were in poor health due to heart conditions and were not easy to get hold of. So this is actually this is true in of itself. You were struggling with that.
Yes, and I was difficult to get in touch with, and I might add to that, I'm still difficult to get in touch with. If you call me and you don't identify yourself on the identifying stuff on the phone, we don't bother. And if you don't leave a message, too bad. We get, I'd say, a good 90% of the phone calls we get in a day are just pure trash.
Really?
Oh yeah, there people looking for money, or they want. Oh my goodness! If you don't give me all your financial information, Amazon is going to shut you down completely, or
Oh,
whatever.
those kind of
You know,
calls.
like,
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. And we've even put ourselves on the do not call list. So
Well,
I'm not sure.
I feel very fortunate that I managed to somehow squeeze through
I don't know
the
this. We must be a soft touch or something. I don't know. We played a couple of games with them, answer the phone and put it down and leave it so that we take up their time. But if we can't identify who the caller is, or the caller doesn't leave a message,
Yeah.
they're never going to hear from us. We'll never talk to them. So we're still difficult to get a hold of. You have all our contact information, though.
And I will keep that close to my chest, don't you worry. Let me ask you what your overall thoughts are in relation to the UFO phenomenon. I know you're not necessarily deeply embedded in what's going on a day-to-day basis, but as you know, it's a continuing conversation. Government's opening up a little bit, Congress is pushing. Where do you think this is going? What do you think is going to happen in terms of the impacts of such an acknowledgement to the world?
Well, first of all, I'm awake and alert, and so you can't, if you're awake and alert, you have to know something about
absolutely.
It. What I recall from the reports I read years ago, decades ago, and what I still see in today's press and things of that sort, there has to be something here. It can't all be smoke and mirrors. It can't all be rotating red, white, green stars because of the fantail swinging back and forth. It can't all be that. Because there are too many very sophisticated viewers or observers who are making excellent reports about these things. And so there has to be something there. One of the people that I worked with at Los Alamos said something one time, it was in relation to the abductions. And his response to the abductions was one of two things. Either people are being abducted and they're doing things with them medically or doing physical things with them, or we have a serious mental health problem in this country. And I thought, you know, that's really true in essence. It's absolutely true. Either, and the same thing goes for the UFO situation in general, the whole
mm-hmm,
environment.
Mm-hmm.
Either there's something here that needs to be studied seriously and seriously discussed, or we have a mental health problem in the country. And we may have both. I mean, many of these reports may be because of mental health problems.
No, you're absolutely right. I remember we actually talked about that during our lunch, and I think I brought up there's a British admiral who said something very similar. He was a five star, very high up in the Ministry of Defence, and he said a similar thing of either these highly trained servicemen and operators are seeing what they're actually seeing, or they're suffering from a delusion. Either way you slice it, this is a national security issue. This is something to be discussed.
Yes, it's an issue, it's a national issue at least. Whether it's national security, it probably is national security. Because if we're talking about people who are associated with nuclear weapons or weapons of destruction of some sort, and they're reporting these kind of things, if they're mentally unstable, we need to kind of know that.
Right.
So.
What does your gut intuition tell you about the phenomenon, if anything, in terms of whether or not it's a benevolent or malevolent or neutral intelligence? Do you have any inclination towards what its nature might be, its intentions?
Well, let's look at abductions. From the abduction reports that I've seen that had some semblance of believability to them, none of them were friendly. I recall the ones I recall, things were done to people without their permission, which, it's, they were being assaulted. They were being treated in a way that we would put people in jail for now. That is not friendly. That is not good folks. I think I mentioned to you before that I believe this is interdimensional, first of all. And I believe that what we could be seeing are the activities of spiritual beings, fallen angels, demons, and even holy angels. Now, what they're doing, I don't know. But before the flood, angels were doing some things on this earth that caused God to flood the entire earth. I told you, I'm a Bible believer. And so that's inescapable. And if you can read it in Genesis chapter 6, 1 through 4, it's very clear, and you can try to spiritualize it away, and I've heard preachers do that, I try to make it seem like, well, they didn't really have sex with human women. But that's what God's word says. And I'm not going to say that, well, God messed that up. I'm going to say that, well, that's what those words mean. That's what it says. And so that's what happened. Angels left their own estate. I think it was Peter that said that, I believe. One of the New Testament writers said they left their proper estate, came down to earth and had relations with human women and produced the Nephilim from that. The Nephilim are the mighty men. So we know that if you believe the Bible, we know that there have been episodes where spiritual beings have done things on this earth that caused physical results and had massive impact on the human race. And so I have no problem believing that, okay, these may be demons, fallen angels, and or holy angels. And the ones who are abducting people can't be the holy angels. They wouldn't do that kind of thing.
So you told me that you had a near-death experience. Can you recall any details about this that you'd be willing to share with us?
Oh yeah, it was a very memorable, if you will. I died several times. Evidently, I went flatlined several times after my heart attack, and luckily I was in the hospital. The doctors were hovering over me, and when I would be dying, when I could feel myself dying, it just kind of graying out, I started floating up toward the right hand top corner of the room, and I was clearly headed that way, and a hand would come down on my left shoulder and I would come back down on the table or the gurney, and then the hand would be lifted off my shoulder and I'd start drifting toward the upper right corner again. It would be getting closer. I had no fear. I had a regret, and I would say this to people. My regret was our three sons were in Albuquerque, 100 miles away. My wife was right there, and I had a chance to tell her I loved her, but I didn't have a chance to tell our sons that I loved them. And so I learned that lesson then. I never leave a conversation with our sons or our grandchildren without telling them I love them, because I don't ever want to be in that situation of regretting that not being done. But this happened several times. A hand would come on my shoulder. I would come down on the gurney. Then it would be lifted off my shoulder and off I'd go. And finally, I reached up after this happened four or five times. And I reached up and I grabbed the hand. And I said, I don't know what you're doing, but you're keeping me here. And the doctor told her, turned out she was the anesthesiologist and she was a Christian. And the doctor told her, don't you take your hand off his shoulder. And so I didn't have any more episodes like that. Well, we got to see her months later when I was able to actually get around a little bit. And she was a Christian and she was praying. What she would do is she would monitor equipment. And once she'd monitor her equipment, she'd turn back around, put her hand on my shoulder and pray. And that was keeping me on this earth. I am absolutely convinced. There is no doubt in my mind that she was keeping me here.
I think it's a very comforting thing to have that type of certainty in life. And I think a lot of people seek that kind of certainty. And although I don't adhere to a particular religious structure, I also have that feeling of certainty that there is something beyond this, and that my life itself seems to be informing that through just the way I move through it and that what comes into my life. So I think it's a very genuine thing to have that level of certainty. And like you said, it's not necessarily about the end result. It's just maybe the process of transition that can be a little nerve wracking.
Yeah, I'd like it to be as painless and quick as possible.
Do you think that, sorry to interrupt you there, what were you going to say?
That's right.
I was just going to say, do you think that at some point our scientific sophistication could get to a point where we're able to in some way prove that there is an afterlife in an objective sense to satisfy the rational skeptics?
I don't think it's going to be a technical advance that's going to do that. No, because remember, our technical advances are three-dimensional, four if you consider time. And if heaven is in some higher dimension, and by the way, it has to be. Read the first few verses of Genesis, the first few verses of the Bible. God spoke this whole thing into existence. He is the uncaused cause of all of this. He has to be standing completely outside of time and space and matter. By the way, that's what you have to have for the five-dimensional. It's not just space and time. It's space, time, and matter.
Right.
So matter has a dimension to it in some way. And so he is outside of all that because he created it all. He spoke it into existence.
I remember, you know, Luis Elizondo, the former director of the ATIP program that was reported in the New York Times. You
know? I know the name.
Yeah. Well, I interviewed him, it's going on about a year and a half ago now when he first initially came out. But one of the things that I remember him saying, and he's repeated it a couple of times, was that he was stonewalled within the government when it came to kind of expanding the parameters of the program that he was running, because a lot of the people within these chains of command were saying these are demonic and we don't want to even acknowledge it. Do you think that might be a problem within government? Do you think that we should be open to investigating this, even if it is something that maybe conflicts with belief systems?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you believe that everyone in Congress and the Senate and our government in general are all angels? Or are they men and women?
I think we're all just the same sinful creatures.
Exactly. Sinful, and not only that, some purposefully sinful. In other words, they mean to do evil.
Right.
We do not know what's driving that. I think it's very interesting that I sense that we're in this season of God's return, and others are taking actions that I believe feed into that feeling that I have that we are in that season. Whether they're taking those actions out of an honest approach to things, or whether they're doing those things for other motivations, I don't know. And I don't really need to know. All I need to know is I know who's going to set this all straight. He's going to come at some point, and we are in that season.
As I said when we started this, you didn't need to come on for this talk. You didn't need to accept our initial offer to come and visit you in Florida. You and Linda graciously accepted that offer to meet us and have now agreed to speak with me on the record. And we've jumped around a few different subjects here, but I think it's worth highlighting just as we wrap this up in relation to the UFO phenomenon. You're not a gatekeeper of this information. You weren't read in to the kind of programs, you know, in the Wilson documents. You had a long and successful career that highlights your intelligence, your credibility, and I think your level of sincerity, because you're not here to over-embellish. You're not here to inflate your ego. You've given us the truth as you know it, and that's all anyone should ever ask of you, and I'm extremely honored that you've given me the opportunity to have that conversation with you.
Well, I've appreciated it. And I appreciate your honesty and straightforwardness. As I said, you and make a great tag team for interviewing people. You put us at ease. I get a sense that you're not going to go out and somehow twist my words or this video, and that's fine. I hope I did somewhat a credible job of presenting who I am and what I know. I told you when we met, I'm a true skeptic. Someone tells me something that I really don't know about, I wonder. I'm not like Willie Williams was, I don't go to the basis of things, but I wonder if that's really true or if they did really see that. And I need some kind of evidence. We didn't talk about the one that my family and I saw in Los Alamos.
Oh, well, let's would you like to briefly touch on that?
Well, we briefly talked. We had a very nice home in Los Alamos, Mexico, and it's 7,200 feet altitude, so we used to get heavy snows. And so we buried our jacuzzi deep in the ground with heavy insulation, so that we could sit in the jacuzzi while it snowed on our head.
Which
It
is
was really interesting.
such a great experience being in a
Oh, it
jacuzzi with
is.
snow.
You got snow piling up on your head, and you're just as warm as toast in this jacuzzi. And so we had a little Shih Tzu puppy or dog that adored Linda, as all animals do. And he would not leave Linda's side. Well, we're sitting in the tub, and our three boys and Linda, and I came out, and all of a sudden the dog left Linda and went inside the house. And that was just not, he was obviously scared. So I sat down in the tub, and the boy started telling me, "Dad, we saw this really weird thing." And I have a mean streak, I guess, especially when it came to our boys. I just needled them. "Oh yeah, sure, you really saw something, huh? Sure you did. Yeah, I know." And they got so disgusted with me, they were threatening to leave, and they got up, and I, "Oh no, don't leave." And so I had my back to the house at first, but when I got up to keep them in the tub, I ended up with my facing the house in the peak of the roof. And I started going into it again. "You guys, you didn't see anything." And I saw this thing come up over the roof of the house. And that's all I can say it was. It was shaped like a stingray.
Like a
It had
stingray.
a stingray, had that shape to it. And it even appeared to have a ridge down the middle of it. It had circular glowing areas underneath it, made no noise whatsoever. Its movement almost seemed as though it was alive. And it slowly went overhead. It must have been very large and fairly far away because it was appearing to be slow. Went out over the canyon and then went up and disappeared. And I have to admit, I have no idea what that could have been. Now, having said that, the United States does, Los Alamos is a no-fly zone. But every now and then, they'll bring an experimental craft to Los Alamos and ask the laboratory to put all sorts of sensors out and see if they can sense this thing in some way, especially when they're developing the stealth aircraft. We saw the stealth aircraft there. This was not a stealth aircraft. We've seen those. We saw those being tested over Los Alamos. This wasn't that. It was reliably a UAP or a UFO. What it was, I don't know.
It's
I don't know.
interesting that you said it almost looked like it was alive.
Right. Yeah. It was kind of undulating,
Flexing and on,
Yeah,
yeah.
like it was flexing.
Wow.
Not flapping wings or anything,
No.
but just kind of slowly flexing. And the round glowing areas were kind of indistinct. They were obviously circles of something, and they were spaced around the underside of the craft. And it was a craft, I believe. I have no idea where it came from, what it was, whether it was experimental in some way. If it was, its propulsion system wasn't what we normally expect.
No. Do you think, and I will let you go in a moment, don't worry, Oak, but do you think that there have been extremely disruptive, exotic, novel propulsion and energy generation systems developed in secret that may be a tribute to some UFO sightings?
I think it's quite possible. I think one of the things that Willie and I suspected years ago is that they took his theory and advanced it much further than we were able to, because they've got the money to do that. We couldn't scare up enough money to build a gadget to try to test some of the predictions. But it makes several predictions that should be testable. It's just going to take a lot of money to do that. And they may have picked up on that, or other theories, other approaches to interdimensionality, or to what this five-dimensional theory appears to do is tie together electromagnetism with gravity. And
Right,
if you
right.
can do that, if you can take advantage of his expanded Maxwell equations, then maybe you can build an anti-gravity device. And I think that's quite possible that's going on. I make a statement. I think I said this to you. If you see in the public domain an advanced aircraft like a stealth fighter or the B-2 bomber, then it's either obsolete or very nearly so, and there's something much more sophisticated behind that.
One last thing before you go, and if you can't answer it, it's not a problem. But there's a well-known researcher by the name of Grant Cameron. Have you heard of Grant Cameron?
I've heard the name, but I don't know him.
Okay, because he's a UFO researcher. He's been around for a number of decades, and he was actually one of the first researchers to receive the Admiral Wilson documents when they were retrieved from Edgar Mitchell's estate after passing on. Back in 2021, I think it was, Grant Cameron put a photo online. It was of a piece of paper with notes and names scribbled onto it, and it would appear to be like a list of attendees for some sort of meeting, or perhaps the establishment of a working group or something along those lines. And on the name list, it was included Bill Wilkinson from CIA written in front of his name, McConnell with NSA written next to his second name, no first name for McConnell. John Alexander was on the list, Hal Puthoff, Ed Speakman, Jake Stewart, Ralph Freeman, Bob Wood from McDonnell Douglas. Basically, it's a list of influential names within the defense, aerospace, intelligence communities. And at the top of the list is the word me, with Los Alamos National Labs written next to it. Now, Grant Cameron is asserting that this list was composed by yourself and that the words me with Los Alamos next to it is you. Does that sound familiar at all?
Somewhat.
Somewhat.
It's been decades, but that's possible. I recognize all those names. As I say, when I read that supposed document, whatever you want to call that, I recognized almost all those names and worked closely with some of them. So that it's conceivable that list was made by me.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll leave it at that. And once again, Oak, I just want to say thank you so much for deciding to do this and to give me the opportunity. And as I said before, it really was a pleasure to sit down with you and Linda. I had a great time, and hopefully, it can be repeated one day.
I hope so too. We've had a great time. Keep in touch. I think you're taking a wide open look at this thing. You don't appear to be approaching it with a narrative in mind already, and that's important. You don't appear to have preconceived notions that you're forcing into the situation, and that happens a lot, even in the scientific arena. So I appreciate that, and I wish you well. And I also wish you well in your spiritual growth, your spiritual journey.
Thank you. Thank you. And same to you.